We're all in college or at college. We're all here. And we're all here for a purpose, for a reason. Maybe you're here because it's always been your lifelong goal to come to ISU. Maybe you're here because what you want to do when you grow up requires a degree. Maybe you're here because your parents wanted you to get a degree. I don't know why you're here, but you're here. And these next, or if you're a freshman, these next 3 years or these next 4 years are going to be here. And if you're a senior, next year, you probably don't know what you're doing. So let's think about this for a second. We grew up and we were born, and then we were raised by whoever, by our parents or our grandparents or whoever raised us. And we spent the first 18 years of our lives knowing one thing and kind of being taken care of and kind of being sheltered and looked over and raised. And then you came here and you got away from that a little bit. Even if you're a townie, you got away from that a little bit. And, you know, then you started figuring things out for yourself. But if you're like me, you came here and you're like, okay, well, I just want to do what I want to do now. Like, when I was little, I wanted to be a waitress at Red Lobster. That was my goal. Dream big. And then I went into this like whole like actress stage, like I really wanted to be an actress, and then I wanted to be a doctor, and you know, you go through your dreams, and then somehow I ended up at speech pathologist, which is probably the lamest of all of those options. But I ended up at speech pathologist, and so I was like, okay, I have to go to college because that requires a degree. And then I got my degree, yay, whoopee, because I need to get another one. So I came back here to get another degree, and all it feels like I'm doing is waiting. I'm just waiting for that time when I can go out and I can do what I wanted to do and what I think what God has called me to do. And it almost feels like this can be a waste of time sometimes, because it's like, dude, just let me do it, you know, like maybe I'll just figure it out on the way, or maybe, you know, you should have started training me as a speech pathologist when I was 5, although it probably wouldn't have worked out so well because I couldn't say my R's till like 4th grade, so it's probably a good thing I didn't start until recently, but I still just feel like I'm waiting for that opportunity to transition into my real life. Whenever you get your degree, I don't know when that will be, 22, 25, like a quarter of your life is over. If you live to be 100 and you're 25, a quarter of your life is over. And that's a big chunk of your life, you know? Like, there are times that I sit there and I think, why do we spend so much time waiting to do what we want to do? So I kind of want to talk to you about the real world, because I haven't exactly entered into it yet, but I wanted to talk to you about the real world because, you know, people tell you, okay, well, just wait until you get into the real world, and supposedly it's, like, super scary, and I don't know, because I'm not there, I guess, but, you know, the real world is this place where you have a lawnmower, and maybe you have kids, and you know how to fix things, and, you know, This is the real world. You pay taxes and you have a budget and da 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 da, and you know, people call you for advice, and maybe you know how to change your own oil. Probably a lot of you know how to do that already, but I don't. So these are all things that qualify as real world. But I keep using quotes, and that's because I tend not to buy into this whole concept of the real world. I think that we were born into the real world, and then we started living our real lives as the second we were born. And I think that most people who say real world will agree with me on that statement, that we've all been living for a long time. It's just been a different kind of living, and real world really means having more responsibility. This kind of thing. But we're all, it's kind of sometimes seems like we're all waiting for that. But I'm here to tell you that I don't think that God wastes our time. I don't think that we spend the first 22 years of our lives waiting to have a job or to have a husband or to have kids or to have a laundry machine. You know, I don't think that God is wasting our time here. I think he's taking this time to prep us for the next thing. And so I want to go into the good juicy stuff of the night. I have been studying Esther with my discipleship girls all semester, and I am like stoked about Esther. Like I could talk about Esther for a while, and I know a lot of you can attest to this. So I want to talk about Esther tonight, and I hope you're okay with that. Esther is a kind of a weird book to read, because if you don't know the history, it's kind of hard to pick up on the little intricacies. And until I really dived into it, I just kind of read it like any other book. And I think that's true for a lot of books of the Bible, but I feel especially fond of Esther. So also, okay, total side note, but this is how I talk. So, and Liz keeps telling me, just talk. You're just talking. But, okay, I need to make a disclaimer. If I do this tonight, it's my thing. I don't know why I started doing it, but it's my new quirk, and I can't stop. So, sorry. Okay, back to Esther. Okay, so I wanted to go into a little background so that we understand a little bit of what's going on. Okay, so King Xerxes is the king of Persia, it covers over 127 provinces, stretching from like India to Ethiopia. And so it's a big chunk of land. And King Xerxes, if I were being nice, I would call him an idiot. He is not exactly the world's best king in the whole entire world. He was he was a drunk. And he kind of was easily persuaded into anything. And so he stretches over this huge chunk of land that is that has obviously a lot of people in it. So a lot of people were hurt by some of his decisions. In fact, I just think this is kind of funny, so I wanted to share it. His Hebrew name is something that I can't pronounce, but it's, I looked up the phonetic transcription, and I think it's Ahasuerosh or something like that, which sounds like the Hebrew word for headache. So like if, you know, whatever, a Hebrew was saying his name, it would sound like they were saying King Headache. You know, like, I can't think of an example. Like stage. Instead of saying stage, it would be like King, okay, that's a bad example. Okay, so he threw this 180-day party. I did not mean to do that. Stick to what you wrote. Okay, he threw this 180-day party, which it was extremely extravagant. And people think that this party was to build morale for the troops that were going out for a war that they were about to fight in Babylon. And so this party goes on and on and on and on. And the first chapter of Esther goes into grave detail to talk about what this party looks like. And at the end of this 180-day party, there was a 7-day party that basically anyone could come to. And at this party, the goblets were made of gold, the couches were made of gold, the rings that held the curtains together were made of silver, the floors were made of like marble and like costly stones and mother of pearl, and the pillars were made of marble. It goes into grave detail about how beautiful the setting is. And so there was a 7-day party going on, not to mention any man had whatever he wanted to drink. So Joe Schmo could walk in and be like, hey, servant, get me whatever I want. Get me 20 bottles of wine. I don't know if they had bottles. Yeah, they did. Okay. So it was a very extravagant party. At the same time, Queen, I'm going to call her Vashti, or I don't know, Vashti or Vashti. Queen Vashti, at the same time, was throwing a party for the women. And so it was kind of like a separate thing, and that was in the king's palace. And she was beautiful. And some people think she's even more beautiful than Esther was, because when they're describing her, it says it twice, and when they're describing Esther, it says it once. So some people think she's even better looking than Esther, but I don't know. So Queen Vashti was throwing this party, and at that time, King Xerxes wanted to brag to all the rest of the people that he was partying with. And he said, yeah, I've thrown this 180-day party, and yeah, I've thrown this 7-day party for everybody, and it's beautiful and wonderful, but you ain't seen nothing yet. And he says, he sends one of his servants and says, go get the queen. And so the servant goes and gets the queen and says, come on, King Xerxes wants to see you. She says, no. Okay. You don't say no to the king. You just don't. Even if you're the queen, you don't say no to the king. It's not like that kind of a relationship. It's not like they are exactly in love. It's not a give and take. It's a very much give and all take kind of a situation. But she says no. So the servant goes back and says, she says no. And the king's like angry. He's like, what do I do? And so drunkenly, they all come to this decision like, okay, I think we should banish her from the kingdom, and she won't be queen anymore. And so that's kind of what they do. Oh, and then they make a new law that women have to listen to their men. Men are now the ruler of the household, which they were already, but now because it's kind of law and not just custom, if there's disobedience, it means death. Okay, so queen's gone, and King Xerxes is alone. He's alone for 4 years. And then he decides, you know, the Bible says when his anger subsided. So 4 years later, his anger subsided, and he was like, I think I want a new queen. And so this search goes out for the new queen, and here's where Esther comes in. A little background on Esther. She's Jewish, which Persia this time and today is not. And Mordecai, Esther's cousin, was taken from Jerusalem, and that's where they lived. And Mordecai was Esther's caretaker. Mordecai was basically her dad. And he took care of her, and she was to be in the running for the king and queen. You should also know that Jews at this time were very much outcasts, although they assimilated into the culture very, very well. At this time, they had kind of forgotten about their Jewish roots, and they had kind of just become Persians. And so they had assimilated, although if you knew you were Jewish, it was kind of like an, oh, okay, kind of situation. So let's go to our scripture for tonight. Do we have that? Yeah, okay. I need to like back up. Okay. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many young women were brought to the citadel of Susa. That's where the palace is, and yep. The citadel of Susa, and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, or whatever, who had charge of the harem. She pleased him and won his favor. I kind of want to pause there. It doesn't come out and say this, but I think Esther had like a really cool spirit, like about her, like she just kind of drew people to her, because I think she was very humble, but that's just my own. Anyway, immediately he provided her with beauty treatments and special food. He assigned to her 7 female attendants selected from the king's palace and moved her and her attendants into the best place in the harem. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Okay, I also want to stop there. He had forbidden her to do so because Jewish culture was not accepted, and she's an orphan. Like, orphans don't necessarily become queens, especially married to Xerxes. Okay. Every day, he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. Before a young woman's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months of oil and myrrh, and 6 months with perfumes and cosmetics. And this is how she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given to her, was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go there, and in the morning, return to another part of the harem to the care of Shashgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summon her by name. When the turn came for Esther, the young woman Mordecai had adopted, the daughter of his uncle Abihail, to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the harem, suggested. And Esther won the favor of everyone who saw her. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all the nobles and officials. He proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. So Esther won. But I want to back up a little bit. Let me turn my page. Okay, I want to look at verse 12, which I think was back a couple slides. Yes, this. Okay, so the whole thing about tonight, the whole message I'm trying to get across is God doesn't waste your time, and God uses transition time, time that it feels like you're just going from here to here for preparation for your heart. And so let's, with that in mind, let's look at these verses. Okay, so 12 months of beauty treatments were described, 6 for oil and myrrh and 6 for perfumes. Okay, so let's think about the setup. We're in the citadel of Susa and we're in the harem. Probably hundreds, I don't know how many women had come to try and compete for this queen position, but it was a beauty pageant to the max. Like, it wasn't just like a month thing where, you know, you work real hard and you go to the beauty pageant. This was at least a year-long thing where you spent all your time with all of these girls and you just primped and got ready and had a bunch of cosmetics and perfumes and oils, and you ate a lot because being heftier was attractive at that time. So that's why Esther got the special diet, because she was liked by the eunuch, so she was like given a bunch of food to make her more fat and more attractive. And so this time was just spent in complete preparation, and preparation of the way she looked, but it was in preparation. And, yeah, okay, so that's what I want to talk about there. Verse 13, the next verse says, the girls were given, and this is how the king would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go there, and in the morning, she would return to the harem. That's not as important. What I want to hone in on is that anything she was given, she could take for her one night with the king. And so this girl had one, all the girls had one chance to prove herself to the king, to say, I should be your queen. Look at me, I'm beautiful. And obviously it was based all on looks. So they were given anything they wanted. And okay, let's think about this. Let's think back to the party. The party was extremely extravagant. So I assume that the spread of jewels and clothing and anything was extremely extravagant. And so, okay, guys, I'm so sorry, but stick with me because I need to talk a little bit about Say Yes to the Dress. the show on TLC, if you're not familiar. I love Say Yes to the Dress. And, okay, so it's based in New York, and these girls go in, and they go into Kleinfeld's, and they try on all these dresses, and it's basically, what dress should I wear on my wedding day? Okay, so it's rare that a girl will have a budget of less than $2,000. And it is not rare for a girl to walk out with like an $8,000 dress. I don't know about you, but that's way more change than I have. And so, but I think that if Kleinfeld's called me up and said, hey, Maddie, I know you're getting married pretty soon, I'd love to give you a free dress, I'd be like, okay, heck yes. And I'd fly out and I would look at all these dresses, but I think that I would land on a pretty pricey dress because, you know, if given a free dress, I might as well take the one that costs more money. But that's just me, and that's my fallen nature. So what does Esther do? Okay, let's look. Yep. Thank you, Kelsey. Okay, when the turn came for Esther to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the harem, suggested. So it's her turn, and she's like, okay, you know, Haggai, or however you say his name, it's my turn to go. And he says, okay, what do you want to wear? And she's like, I don't. When all the rest of the girls have probably thought, oh, that looks good, that looks good, that looks good, and knows exactly what they're going to wear. Believe you me, I know exactly what I'm going to wear on my wedding day. And so, which, by the way, is in 33 days. Okay, so, I totally distracted myself. I did not mean to do that. Okay. So, that's where I was. Nothing but what Haggai suggested. Okay, so it's like this whole entire 12 months, she's been spent getting herself ready. And throughout it all, I don't think that Esther becomes vain. I don't think that she's like, oh, yeah, now I'm pretty. Oh, yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah, I'm going to wear this, that, and the other thing. And I would assume that the other girls probably did. And this is what I would also assume, so take it for what it's worth, that the other girls probably went there or went to the spread of whatever it was and said, I want this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that, and got all dressed up and extremely extravagant and went to the king, and it's just like, where are you? I don't know what you look like because you have so many other beautiful things on. But what Esther does is she's like, maybe I should just make it simple. And I don't know that what Haggai picked out was simple, but I would assume so, because girls' tastes tend to be a little bit more extravagant. And so that's what I want to, yeah, okay. So then, verse 14, maybe, oh, yeah, go back a little bit. And then, okay, the top, yeah, we're good. She would not return to the king unless he pleased her, unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. And so what she would do instead was she would go to the other part of the harem where all the rest of the concubines lived. And so it was like one chance, and if not, you're going to be a concubine, which is, it was basic, it's not like a sex slave, but it's more of like a glorified mistress. Like, she was just there. She was taken care of and whatever, given a place to stay and food and all this kind of thing, but she wasn't by no means queen. She was just kind of there for the king. So what I want to talk about is that Esther had to take these 12 months pretty seriously. Because what she ends up doing, I so badly wish that I could tell you the entire story of Esther, but there's not enough time. But what she ends up doing is amazing. And this woman ends up saving the Jewish race, and she ends up turning a lot of Persians turned to Judaism because of Esther and because of Mordecai and because of that time they spent in preparation. And it wasn't just a waste of time sitting, waiting to compete in the beauty pageant. It was a time that Esther took extremely seriously, and Esther didn't get vain and think she was too hot to trot. Esther took this time extremely seriously. And so I want to go back to where I started. I started talking about how you guys are all in college and you're transitioning from here to there. And right now I'm kind of in a funny stage of life where I already mentioned it, but I am transitioning from singleness into marriage. And by the end of it all, I will have spent like 11 months engaged. And if I hadn't, and right now it's like 10 months, so if I hadn't have taken this past 10 months to be engaged and to experience this time of my life for kind of the last time, then I don't think that God would have, I know that God would have still worked, but I feel like there wouldn't have been as much time for preparation for me. And if you guys don't take these next 2 years or 1 year or 1 month or whatever it is to prepare yourself for what God has in store, then perhaps you won't be ready either. And I'm quite fond of this ministry, and what I think is that you all are capable of doing amazing things. And that when I say all, I don't mean to exclude any of you, I mean to say all. And I think that all of you, I don't know that you'll end up saving thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews the way Esther ended up doing, or Christians or whatever, but maybe you will. Who knows? Because God tends to use the weak and the small and the orphan Jew girl in Persia to lead her people to something greater. And here we are in Holy Week, and it's like, you know, I can imagine what Jesus was thinking during this week. But this week wasn't just a transition into what was going on. Jesus' whole life was not just a transition to, well, I got to die. Well, I got to die on a cross. I know that. It wasn't that. He used the time that he had. And here's the thing, guys. We hear a little bit of Jesus' like preteen years, and then we don't hear about him until he's like 30. The Bible doesn't go into detail about what his teenage years and his 20s were really like. But what was he doing? I don't know. I'm sure he was ministering in some way, shape, or form. But what I also think he was doing was preparing. And if God, in the form of Jesus, needs to prepare for what our lives are going to be like, how can we possibly exclude ourselves from that? And how can we possibly say, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to just go and do. And oh my word, I hear that so often. I just want to go. I just want to go help people. I just want to go do that. And that is so beautiful. And that is exactly what God's intention is for your life. God's intention is for you to go and help people. But right now, it's prep time. Right now, it's the 12 months that you're getting yourself ready so that you can eventually go and do whatever God has in store for your life. And so, and here's what I want to end on, this note that I want to end on. I don't think that the transition ever ends. Like, once you get to the real world where you have a lawnmower and you know how to fix it and all that kind of thing, once you get to the real world where you do taxes and da-da-da-da-da, I don't think the transition stops. Like, ask Pete, ask Ben and Joe, ask my mom, you know, she's still transitioning. My mom would love to talk to you, by the way. But she's still transitioning. Like, and after I get married, I'm still going to be transitioning, and I'm still going to be changing, and God is still going to be morphing my heart to be more and more like His. So if I reach the goal of earning another degree, is my job done? Absolutely not. And I know that all of you know that. Tonight is just a reminder to use this time to your advantage, and to use this time, to use future time, to use the 9 months that, if you're a woman, the 9 months before you have a baby, to use that time as a preparation time, the 12 months before you get married, or you know, the 6 months before you start your job, or whatever, to use that time to get ready for the next thing, but not forget that God is now, and God's not just then, and God uses you now, and not just then. And so, with that, I'm going to pray and ask the band to come up. But I want you guys to be thinking about this whole concept of transition time this week, in preparation for Good Friday and for Easter, to remember like what Jesus might have been thinking about during this transition time. So let me pray. God, I thank you. I thank you that you use us, even when it doesn't feel like we're being used, even when we're sitting in class. God, I just pray that you use our time, and that we don't view it as just a transition. And God, I pray that we find you in the small things, that we find you in the most mundane ways, God. I thank you for those little ways that you show yourself to us, God. And I just pray, I pray for everybody that hears this, Lord. I just pray that they are able to hear your message in this and not mine. God, I love you, and I thank you for this opportunity. It's in your Son Jesus' name I pray. Amen.